You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show here on InfoWars Sunday Night Live. I'm your guest host, Royce White. I'm in the belly of the beast, Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'm just hoping that we find a moment of clarity here in the darkest hours our nation has ever seen. I was talking about the Chinese earlier, and I've said before on the show that the disadvantage that we have in a asymmetric war with the Chinese is that we're a nation ruled by lawyers, corrupt lawyers, as a matter of fact, and they're a nation ruled by totalitarian engineers, ethno-national totalitarian engineers. I mean, there's a reason why the war games, we always lose the war games held by the, played out by the Pentagon, is because things like that matter. A culture, a nation's culture, plays a role in any eventual outcome of military or kinetic conflict. I don't like being up against an ethno-national totalitarian engineer regime, especially with just a bunch of finocchio lawyers. And that's what I was saying earlier about the eye test, you know, the sniff test of some of these people in the Congress and in the Senate. And it's just a matter of fact, like, we talk a lot, American people talk a lot about being frustrated with the two-party system, frustrated with politics. And I'd be lying if I said that I don't feel the same way, because I do. That's part of the reason why I'm running for U.S. Senate. But I also see, when you vote in incumbents 93%, you're really saying you don't care. You don't have a problem with the way things are. And I bring up China as just as a cautionary tale. In my opinion, the only way that China catches the car, the only way that China defeats us, you know, even in the long run, is if a Mamdani type of politician becomes president of the United States. And we're, I mean, being the mayor of New York City is a stone's throw from being the president of the United States. People have to understand the significance of being the mayor of New York City. It just in its scope and its public profile. And, you know, there is a communist cry for Mamdani, similar to Luigi, whatever his name is there, that shot the United Healthcare CEO and, you know, on the street in Manhattan. And keep an eye out for that case, because I see fireworks coming there at the perfect and opportune time to be another distraction from the real issue, secure elections, right? They're going to let this, you know, lunatic off. And, you know, you got Tyler Robinson out there, you got Charlie Kirk. I mean, you got a lot between now and the election. You got a lot of distractions out there to choose from, in terms of, you know, shifting the focus from where it should be. But one place we should be at least tracking is, the only way China catches the car is if we elect a Mamdani as president or somebody similar. That's the only way that they actually catch the car and beat us in the long run, in my opinion. You know, or we could have a digital dystopia where, China makes core components or essential parts, and effectively they beat us in the AI arms race. That's possible. You know, it's less likely. I more see it as a danger that we devolve from within, with a Mamdani as a president, or even an AOC. I mean, they're the same person, right? That's why they're doing the romance between jihad and Latinx, or whatever they call it these days, the jihad Latin alliance. It's one of those kind of people. It's like Gavin Newsom doesn't have a shot in hell at winning, and for the Democrats to even put him up as a nominee is kind of farcical, in my opinion. And they may do it. I mean, they may actually do it. It's just farcical. He's another mook. He's another fruitcake. I mean, he really is. Guys who hold their feet, guys who cross their legs under the table, are fruitcakes. I'm just going to tell you. You know, Roy's the ad hominem. So ad hominem, what does that do? You know, that's not mature. It's not statesmanlike. Dude, don't cross your legs under the table, okay? Hold your legs. Sit like a man. You didn't even cross your legs. I don't even like guys who cross their legs in a chair. You know, at the most, you cross your legs down by the ankles, okay? You understand what I'm saying? You cross your feet down by the ankles. You don't cross one leg over your lap like a you know, come on. We got to go back to the basics here. Honestly, I say it jokingly, but I'm being pretty serious, actually. You know, our standard of men is just like in a crisis. It really is. Our standard of men is in a crisis in this country, and we want to fight wars. It's like you can have a Finocchio culture if you want to be like Switzerland or something, right? If you want to be a non-confrontational country, you can have a Finocchio culture. If you want to be a non-confrontational country, an egalitarian country that's subsidized by a much bigger power, of which you should be a tributary, but you end up being a sort of monarch state, and all of the European Union are like a collection of monarch states. We're like the tributary to the EU. But in a right world, if you want to be an egalitarian, subsidized tributary, then you can cross your legs. You can have men that cross their legs, right? But if you want to be a badass global dollar empire, you got to have men who stand up straight, men who can do some damage at the drop of a dime, men who are tough, who are gritty, you know, who like a little confrontation. You know, well, and look what we've become, right? And we're afraid of the Chinese. I just think we are. I think we're afraid of the Chinese. I think President Trump's calling their bluff every time he gets the chance. I really do believe that. You can't really look at the geopolitics and not see that this latest move to blockade the blockade is President Trump, you know, calling President Xi's bluff. Now, the question is, when President Trump goes to visit, what kind of deal they come out with. And I would venture to guess, and this is just me, and this is a cautionary tale to you, Mr. President, I think that President Xi and the entire CCP believe they can, you know, I believe they think they can wait President Trump out. They can wait out the entire MAGA movement. All they have to do is wait long enough to get an AOC in the seat of power and have control of the government, and enough conservatives will abide by the corrupt rule of law to let this country slip right back into the position it was in. And things are better than they were. Don't let people tell you they're not. We can disagree, and we'd be right to disagree, and we should voice that. And Alex voiced that. He says, listen, I'm alarmed at what I'm seeing with this war and the direction of things. Praise be to God. He's supposed to do that. But we can't say that things aren't better than they were, or they would have been. You know, it's like you're shot. Are you shot in the foot? Are you shot in the, you know, are you shot in the balls? Or are you shot in the head? There's a degree of severity there. And the same can be said for a country. Where are you shot? How much blood are you losing? Is a tourniquet even going to work? You know, these are things that just, as a matter of fact, you got to start to assess. And I think things are categorically better than they would have been and than they were. But it's all for nothing if we let the Democrats win. And we have to make strategic choices about the issues that we hang our hat on. Like, for example, if we were just going to go to war anyway without any congressional oversight or any, which I said 7 weeks ago on the show, Thomas Massie still has yet to tell me the math on asking the Congress to do anything when it's captured by a foreign lobby or any special interest in lobby. If the Congress is captured, why ask the president to ask Congress permission to do anything? By default, that would be that should rightfully be seen as an act of treason. If I know my Congress is captured by special interests and lobbies, and I think one of the first things we should think about doing, well, this would be a real tell too. I think a referendum issue should be special interests and lobbies. I think, you know, right alongside the Save America Act, we should bring a bill to the United States Senate before the midterms to put people on the record who really believes in getting money out of politics, special interests and lobbies. We should ban them. across the board. You should see broad bipartisan support to ban special interests and lobbies, which you won't. You'll see very little support, which should be the great tale, and there'd be no way we vote in 93% of the incumbents or 94, 95% of the incumbents in 2026. We have to get the message right. And it's right for people to say, it's right for people to go, we're alarmed. Not only are we alarmed at the prospect of us getting into another war for the kinetic implications, we're alarmed at what it signals. And if we weren't going to ask Congress for permission, why did we have to do this before the midterms? Why did we have to do this before the midterms and risk President Trump having his agenda stalled by the few, you know, several or so seats they need to swing a majority? Why risk that? It's like we had the perfect coalition. You can't argue with it. It was successful. It was successful. And, you know, President was at the UFC, and it's always good to see him at the UFC fight and good to see the response. It means that at least a portion of our country still has half a brain, right? But I remember him pulling up to the, you know, the UFC, and it was Tucker, and it was, you know, it was Rogan was there, and all of these people who are now like sort of persona non grata. It's like, okay, well, where's the math then? See, because the Christian Zion, and maybe the strategic, you know, the strategic thing here is, for once, we're going to try and pull on the low propensity Christians by using a Christian Zionist message. Maybe. Hey, I didn't make the rules. I just work here, okay? I'm just telling you the way things are. There is a significant, at least on paper, there is a significant low propensity Christian community all across this country. And maybe some people have made the decision. It's more advantageous for us, for our national security and everything else we want to do, to go after the Christian Zionist vote for once. Okay, fine. But then how do you recruit a Michelle Tafoya who's pro-choice, publicly pro-choice? It's almost as if somebody in the bowels of Langley is calling the bluff of American Christians and saying, well, which one is more important to you, Israel or abortion? See, and it's right here in Minnesota. I can feel the spiritual implications of it. Which is more important to you Christians, Israel or life? Which one is more important, Israel or life? And you got to ask yourself, say, the conservative movement, what has been conserved? We didn't conserve the Second Amendment. We didn't conserve the First Amendment. We haven't conserved a pro-life. President Trump, you know, improved the position. But you know, en masse, we didn't conserve it. And it doesn't look like we intend to conserve it because, I mean, the NRSC, who's supposed to be the bastion of conservative Christian, Judeo-Christian values, you know, just got to throw that in there. The NRSC, Tim Scott, Lindsey Graham, and the rest of the gang, they're all conserving the Judeo-Christian ethic, and they recruited a pro-choice candidate to run for United States Senate. Wonder how that'll go over when we have to vote in Supreme Court justices. So you don't plan on conserving pro-life. Is the Alamo Israel? Is the Alamo of the conservative movement Israel? Is that like the one thing we're going to dig our heels in and conserve? And you just got to ask yourself, like, okay. All right. I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't agree. I think it's a grave spiritual indictment of the conservative movement and Christians that Israel would be that another country's problems or threats and dangers would be the Alamo, the rally point, the sort of red line of the conservative movement in America. But hey, fine, let's see how hard you're willing to fight. I know you're willing to fight really hard over there. Let's see how hard you're willing to fight here in America. That's going to be a great tale, right? Because, I mean, if we're willing to go all out, balls to the walls, we're going to fight a war, we're going to put ground troops there on Karg Island or wherever else in the name of Christ, we're going to fight our way to victory in the name of Christ, the world away. It's going to say a lot about this country's Christian community when we see how hard we're willing to fight here. And if I have to say, and I do say so myself, the reason why I joined the movement and the reason why I ran as a Republican is because of my faith in Christ. My love of country, no doubt, and I love the country, and I believe in the Constitution, but my faith in Christ is what made me join the conservative movement, because I woke up one day and to be a Christian or a Catholic was considered white supremacy. I'm pretty fair-skinned, but nobody would mistake me for a white man. My last name is White, but nobody would mistake me for a white man. I woke up one morning in my mid-20s, actually right around the time George Floyd died, and I led this protest to the Federal Reserve, and I had people bow and pray, and a couple days later, I ran into a few folks that gave me some insight about just how hostile the current political climate was toward Christianity. It's like, why isn't every conservative news outlet showing the Christians there in Ethiopia celebrating Easter? Why is conservative mainstream media, Conservative Inc., why are they not replaying the Christians there in Ethiopia celebrating Easter Sunday and Good Friday by the tens and hundreds of thousands? Christianity was in Africa 250 years or so before it ever reached Europe. It's not a religion of white supremacy. Christ wasn't white. He wasn't white. He wasn't black. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. Christ is Christ. But he certainly did. We know where he came from. We know what his ethnic, makup was. Per the stories. I mean, we could say, and hey, you could make an argument that Israel, that Nazareth and Jerusalem and that place in the Middle East was already, an intersection of a relatively smaller global economy or trade route. So there are plenty of people who were there in Israel, many different skin colors and pigmentations, but ultimately, he was from Israel, okay? Point being is, in what world do they get off saying that Christianity is white supremacy? That's how you got people like me. That's how you got people like me. That's how we're going to draw people in. That's how we're going to mend. That's how we can only mend the racial divide in this country through the gospel. We can only mend, let me say it again, for the people in the back, we can only mend the racial divide and animosity in this country through the gospel. But I don't think the conservative movement is willing to take the gospel anywhere, for the most part. I don't think that the conservative movement is even upholding the gospel anymore. I think we're reaching a point where the gospel may in fact become canceled. I see a future where the conservative movement is actually the political movement that cancels the gospel. Is it anti-Semitic? Is the gospel anti-Semitic? Just go ahead and say it. Say it. Say the New Testament's anti-Semitic so we can get out of the way. A lot of these Christian Zionists are still going to fight for you anyway. Just say it. I mean, don't dance around it. The New Testament is anti-Semitic. Just say it. Just go ahead and put it out there, and then we can watch all these Christian Zionists line up to die for another country anyway, because they will. And I do think it's that bad. I think we have a nationwide, a cultural-wide metastasization of mass formation psychosis. I really do, and it's across the political spectrum. You can take any number of cultural wedge issues and show you exactly how crazy America is. The gospel anti-Semitic? I see a future where we can't use the gospel to mend a racial divide or any other divides. We have trouble even deciding whether or not in the Christian community the gospel is still something that we value. Questions to answer. But if you go and fight a war and wrap yourself in the cloth of Christ, you sure as hell better have your spiritual house in order. Because hell is the consequence if you don't. Just saying. You sure as hell better have your spiritual house in order if you want to drape yourself in the cloth of Christ to wage a war, because if you don't, hell is the consequence, and hell is real. Just as real as the resurrection, hell is also real. And there are a lot of people there, and there are a lot of people going. Sorry to say it. A lot of people going. A lot of people going who say they're Christian, too, by the way. Food for thought. Food for thought this Sunday evening. We can, look, and all that being said, we can win. We can do this. We can win. I've seen it. I've been on that coach on the sideline, a bunch of 15-year-old boys. They all have their own agenda in mind, right? They all got their own plans. And, you know, you just got to call the time. You got to burn the time out every once in a while. Wait, breath. Give me four. Come sit your ass down. Sit down. Breathe. You're all out of sorts. Breathe. Just breathe. Take a breath. Coach is going to chew you out, but take a breath first so you can hear what I'm really saying. What are the fundamentals? Let's go back to the fundamentals. Stay in front of your man. Can you stay in front of your man? No, you can't. Sub, you get in there. Okay, you take a blow. You watch. Okay, get yourself together because you got to go back in. Stay in front of your man. The help side is late. You're a step late, and a step makes a big difference. Get over there quicker. You have to rotate down and fill. When that pass goes out, you got to scramble. You got to scramble and close out because this kid named Johnny from Indiana, he can shoot that rock. If you don't close out on him quick enough, he's going to spray your ass. Okay? Then I'm going to have to sub you out. And we got to run next week in practice because I just don't think you play hard enough. I don't think you want it bad enough. I don't think we want it bad enough. I think we have, and I'm talking politics now, I don't think we want it bad enough. I don't think we really want to change this country for the better. I think we know what's wrong. I think we have a lot of problems with the country, with the way things are, but I think the convenience is so good, we hesitate to really change it. I don't know. Tell me, am I wrong? Why does the American public vote in 93% of the incumbents? What other possible explanation can you give except we like that we like getting screwed. We love it. We crave to be subjugated. We crave tyranny. We crave tyranny, whether it's overt tyranny so the left can play their secular humanist martyrdom, or we crave like a subtle, sort of passive, you know, tyranny, economic tyranny, right? We crave wage slavery. We crave to be 19th century Russian serfs under a techno-feudal empire. We crave it. We crave subjugation. Even our leaders, some of our leaders are like, bring on the technocracy. I'm like, whoa, hold on, dude. What? Time out. Let me burn another one. Wait a second. We can't be doing technocracy, are we? Okay, President Trump's divine appointment is to break the rules-based order. My generation, we have to take on the digital dystopia. We have to take on the technocracy. President Trump's 80 years old. Okay, he's 80. He's 80. What he's doing at 80 is nothing short of a miracle, honestly. I mean, just got to say that. Disagree or agree. It's nothing short of a miracle. The man's 80. We've pushed the Overton window of what we expect from our elders well beyond an inappropriate place, as you can see from the Congress. You know, average age is 64 years old. Some people think you're in your prime. I don't. Our founding fathers certainly weren't at that age when they built this great nation. But we have to fight the technocracy. President Trump's got some key decisions in front of him. And I must say, I kind of like it. I think it's kind of gangster. All the oil's going to run. One belt, one road, done. Belt the ass is the new initiative, the American belt the ass agenda. And we're going to run all the oil. But then you have to double and triple down. We're going to actually run all the oil. No, nothing passes through unless America's getting a cut, a big cut. Okay. But in the end, we still don't like the Lindsey Grahams. Because a man named Lindsey, who talks the way that he does, is never going to lead this country to prosperity. It's been another episode of the Alex Jones Show here on Sunday night. It's been an honor to be with you again. God bless you all. God bless America. Godspeed. Have a great weekend. I'll see you at 7 a.m. White House Free People Radio.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VFM members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VFM membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.